Paramedic here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This administration is fundamentally different. They're going out intentionally to violate laws, intentionally to deny civil rights, intentionally to ignore the Constitution, ignore Congress. But this is the appeal. Our liberties, the separation of powers, our constitutional order is at grave risk. And unless the administration pulls back, we are over the precipice.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to George Conway Explains It All. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark. And because I'm not a lawyer, I've asked my good friend George Conway to come to the studio and explain all the illegal news of the day.
Last year it was legal news, this year illegal.
Except today.
Patently.
Today
we had some legal news, yes.
Well, it's kind of, yeah. This is like the good stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so worried that if I read this to you, you're going to cry. It's so good.
I do that for the MAGA people.
You do.
They got, like, you know, they got
they're thirsty for tears.
Yes, and it boosts the subscriptions.
You keep MAGA hydrated.
Yeah, I keep MAGA hydrated.
Good
yeah.
job.
They drink my tears.
Let me read you this section from the Fourth Circuit.
Judge J. Harvey Wilkinson.
A Reagan appointed judge.
Yeah.
So an old school conservative?
I appointed him, and there he goes again.
Is that your Reagan impression?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I hadn't heard that before.
I also had a Jimmy Carter impression that sounds kind of like Bill Clinton.
Sure.
Yeah.
I okay. can get that.
I mean, I used to
I
do that. I used
context.
To do much better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I used to do these much better. It's like, you know, it's 2025 now.
Okay, well, I'm just going to read this like a normal person. It is difficult in some cases to get to the very heart of the matter. But in this case, it is not hard at all. The government is asserting a right to stash away residents of this country in foreign prisons without the semblance of due process that is the foundation of our constitutional order. Further, it claims in essence that because it has rid itself of custody that there is nothing that can be done. This should be shocking. Not only to judges, but to the intuitive sense of liberty that Americans far removed from courthouses still hold dear. The government asserts that Obrego Garcia is a terrorist and a member of MS-13. Perhaps, but perhaps not. Regardless, he is still entitled to due process. If the government is confident of its position, it should be assured that position will prevail in proceedings to terminate the withholding of the removal order. Moreover, the government has conceded that Obrego Garcia was wrongly or mistakenly deported. Why then should it not make what was wrong right?
Yes.
I don't read legal opinions as often as you do, but this is a nice, tight, 6-page reading.
Oh, it's a keeper. I mean, it just makes me want to sing, glory, glory, hallelujah. It is profoundly a moving opinion. And it's brevity. It's only like 5 or 6 pages.
It's like 6 pages. I could read it.
And I mean, the context of it, just so that everybody knows, was, I guess it was Monday, Judge Zenas in District of Maryland, basically saying WTF. And she knows they're stonewalling her and not complying with her orders. And basically she decided she's going to order discovery into what the government is and is not doing to follow her order that the Supreme Court left intact without recorded dissent, her order that says that the government shall facilitate the return of Mr. Obrego Garcia to the United States. And then we haven't had a podcast since, but there was that absolutely atrocious dog and pony show in the Oval Office where – you know, the two thugs, our thug and the El Salvador thug, were pointing at each other and basically, you know, the orange thug was saying, well, we can't make the guy sitting next to me, the tin pot dictator from El Salvador, return this guy, can't do anything at all. This man who thinks he's going to make Xi drop to his knees, right?
Yeah.
He can't do anything about
master negotiator.
Can't do
art of
anything
the deal.
About the tin pot dictator. Yeah. He's paying millions of dollars to hide these people in a concentration camp.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you've got the tin pot dictator from El Salvador, who's not even wearing a tie, right?
I was assured that if you went into the Oval Office not wearing a tie,
I mean, I would at least button
that
up my
J.D.
shirt,
Vance
right?
would just materialize and berate you for it,
and say you should be saying thank
Why
you
don't
for
you
being
say
here,
thank you?
And you should say thank you by giving us Mr. Abrego Garcia back. That didn't happen.
It did not.
Did not happen. And so, you know, he's basically saying, well, we can't do anything about it because what are we going to do? Are we going to smuggle him back in the United States? So he's basically putting it on Trump. They're pointing at each other. It's like, you know, Stephen Miller probably orchestrated this. And
right.
Those statements weren't really consistent. But anyway, this judge is pissed and has every right to be. You don't do this kind of thing. What's going on in this case and other case, which we'll probably talk about, the Boasberg case
yes.
involving the Venezuelans. I mean, if you were a civil litigant doing this kind of lying, stonewalling, purposely misinterpreting orders, ignoring orders. I mean, basically, they're stonewalling and gaslighting federal judges. You would be done.
And the Supreme Court.
And the – yes. Well, they're federal judges too. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. You know, I guess that makes sense. They would fry your ass. The problem is this is the United States government. And nobody – you know, this we've never seen this level of ridiculous contempt for the federal courts by a federal administration. I mean, even President Truman obeyed the order in the Steele seizure case that said he couldn't in an actual time of war – He seized a steel mill in Ohio, Youngstown, Ohio, in order to maintain war production for the Korean War. And he cited his Article II powers. And the Supreme Court said, uh-uh, you can't do that. You need a statute. You just can't take property like that. You need a law. And then, you know, let's leave apart the question of just compensation. And even Justice Jackson, Truman's own former attorney general, wrote one of the legendary concurring opinions of all time, basically saying, you know, presidents can't do this. And Truman obeyed. All right. And then there are other times. There are just other circumstances. Nixon turned over the tapes.
Well, they talk in here about Brown v. Board of Education.
Brown v. Board of Education, right. Well, Brown v. Board is a little bit different because those were state authorities involved there.
Mm-hmm.
Those were local school districts. But the federal government, presidents of the United States, have obeyed the Supreme Court. And the best example is, again, Nixon, U.S. versus Nixon. And so what's happening here is unprecedented. Now, they're not saying we refuse to obey court orders. They're saying things like, well, there are six reasons why, including the president's foreign affairs power, you can't make us do this. And then they're, you know, misconstruing the order, and they're just playing games. But fundamentally what they're doing is, and the magic word of the day is contumacious, which is the legal adjective that describes contemptuous behavior against the court that violates
the court. Oh, is that what that word is?
Contumacious, C-O-N-T-U-M-A-C-I-O-U-S, contumacious.
Okay.
Okay, that's what that means. You're going to hear a lot of that word in the not too distant future because that's what that they're engaging in contumacious behavior left and right. And this opinion, what happened here was after, I should have gotten to this a little bit earlier, I'm rambling on. On Monday, I guess it was Monday or Tuesday, Judge Zenas in Maryland in the Abrego Garcia case ordered this discovery that I mentioned. And yesterday, the government filed what's called a petition for a writ of mandamus, which is basically an emergency writ when you don't otherwise have a right to appeal, saying this judge has just done something crazy. Make it stop. And then they also asked for a stay pending the disposition of the petition for writ of mandamus. They filed that yesterday. I didn't even know they filed it until I just got here and you guys handed me this opinion, and then I had to go to the docket sheet to find out what happened because everything's just happening so fast here.
Yeah, this is breaking news.
This is like breaking.
Maybe we should have mentioned this right now.
Literally, this thing dropped within the last hour before I entered this room, and it is 4:20 Eastern Daylight Time on Thursday the 17th. Okay, so the application that was just denied in this opinion was filed yesterday, probably last night. I don't know when. The Abrego Garcia's response is due at 5 o'clock in 39 minutes. The court didn't even wait for the response. They don't have to respond now. The court just said, we don't need to hear from the – we already know what the answer is. And the answer is no effing way. And they base – that's – and that's what you see there. And basically it's just so eloquent, this opinion. Every – like this should be read in every civics class in high school and every government class today in college, because this is what – this is what this constitutional crisis that is now boiling is over. And this Judge Wilkinson, this Reagan appointee, just so eloquently explains why, you know, why we need to have the government, the executive branch, obey court orders. And before it's too late, he says.
I'm going to read the parts.
Right? Before it's too late. Or something like that.
Hold on, I've got these. Let me give you some of the other flavors.
I want to do a dramatic. We do like a special pod where I do a dramatic reading of it.
Do you want to read the whole thing? I have sections underlined that I'm going to.
It'll be a separate special pod. You can charge money for it.
Sounds great.
And then somebody and then Barry can sing the battle hymn of the Republic in the background.
Okay, or I could just read some of these passages and you could react to them.
I'll just hum the battle hymn of the Republic.
Okay, great. So right in the beginning, one of the things the judge says out of the gate, while we fully respect the executive's robust assertion of its Article II powers, so basically, we get it. You think that you can do anything you want, Mr. President, but we shall not micromanage the efforts of a fine district judge attempting to implement the Supreme Court's recent decision.
So important. They're sticking up for the judge because they –
right out of the gate.
Because this administration, this lying garbage pail of an administration – can I say that on this podcast?
You can.
Yes. Okay. Is lying about these judges. They're radical left says, you know, I mean, I'm sure Stephen Miller probably has said that like six times already. I don't know. Somebody's saying it. They're saying all these judges like Boasberg, they're radical left.
That's in here. Yeah. We're going to talk about that too.
And remember, you know, whenever that meeting, that awful meeting in the Oval Office was, the days are blurring together. Trump basically said, called the press sick for asking about this case because it's sick to want to return terrorists to the United States. So basically, Donald Trump is saying these judges are all sick because they want to give Mr. Abrego Garcia due process. And the Supreme Court, which said he's entitled to due process without recorded dissent.
So I'm going to skip around because what you're talking about right now, actually, I want to – this judge sort of addresses this – thing between the judicial branch and the executive branch. He says, now the branches come too close to grinding irrevocably against one another in a conflict that promises to diminish both. This is a losing proposition all around. The judiciary will lose much from the constant intimations of its illegitimacy. Right. So all of you guys calling us, you know, lefty losers, right, to which by dint of custom and detachment, we can only sparingly reply, meaning because
they're judges, they can't go out on, you know, and say this is bullshit and Miller is a liar and Bondi is a liar and Trump is insane. They can't say these things. That's why we have to say them very loudly.
That's right. But instead, this judge says the executive will lose much from a public perception of its lawlessness and all of its attendant contagions. The executive may succeed for a time in weakening the courts, but over time, history will script the tragic gap between what was and all that might have been, and law in time will sign its epitaph.
Okay, I'm going to start crying.
I know, don't cry, but I have just a little bit more here.
Move.
It is, as we have noted, all too possible to see in this case an incipient crisis, but it may present an opportunity as well. We yet cling to the hope that it is not naive to believe our good brethren in the executive branch perceive the rule of law as vital to the American ethos. This case presents their unique chance to vindicate that value and to summon the best that is within us while there is still time.
That is just so beautiful, and it is so right, but it is so wrong in the following sense. A losing proposition, the judiciary will lose, the executive will lose much. Donald Trump doesn't think so. He does not fucking care. The good people in the executive. Where does it say that, right? Our good brethren in the – there are no good brethren in the executive branch who have any authority.
But that is the appeal. That is who he's appealing
appeal. To. This is the moral appeal of the courts to the public.
Yes.
It is a profoundly important moral appeal. This is America. This is what America is supposed to be. And, you know, if I think about it too much, I will be moved again. But the problem is the people in the White House who are, you know, Donald Trump does not give a shit about this. He does not give a shit about right and wrong. He only cares about power. He's going to treat this with contempt. And so are the people around him who are not good brethren. And sistren? What's sistren?
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, you know, Pam Bondi, forget about it.
Yeah, but let me – so there's one –
so that I put on my JV last hat there.
Yeah, no, I know. And we can get to whether or not it's going to sort of matter. Although at this point
– No, it matters. This has to be fucking said. And again, God bless J. Harvey Wilkinson. This has to be said because this is the historical moment. This is what's at stake. He's basically saying our republic is at stake here. He doesn't use that kind of language, but it's implied.
And it's pretty close to being explicit.
Language that you would never have thought you would see in a judicial opinion because you never would have thought there would be an executive. Now, executives do stuff that's illegal all the time, and they get slapped down for it, and they say, okay, well, I don't know if we agree with that, but okay. I mean, this administration is fundamentally different. They're going out intentionally to violate laws, intentionally to deny civil rights, intentionally to ignore the Constitution, ignore Congress. And that's why I've been saying now for a couple of months, they're going to ignore the courts. But this is the appeal. This is the appeal to history, to morality, to the public. Please, what is at stake is your liberty. We are here to tell you that, to tell the administration that it is violating the law. That's our job. And our liberties, the separation of powers, our constitutional order is at grave risk. And unless the administration pulls back, we are over the precipice. And that is what Judge Wilkinson is saying here.
Here's what – when you brought up the Oval Office meeting, which was sort of a sick-making meeting, it was funny, these sort of made-for-TV Oval Office events. I felt very much watching him with Bukele was a lot like watching them with Zelensky, right? It was this like stomach-churning, oh my God.
This is insane, right?
He's sitting here like with Zelensky, the Democratic ally. He's chiding him.
The man who is fighting tyranny. And then Bukele, who is tyranny.
Who is a dictator.
Yes.
He's a little dictator.
He calls himself a dictator. He calls himself the world's coolest dictator.
World's coolest dictator. Awesome.
Well, Trump probably takes offense at that.
That's true. Trump's in the running. Yeah. That meeting was insane. But one of the things that came out of that meeting was they caught him on a hot mic. They caught Trump on a hot mic. Talking to Bukele, saying – Yeah,
this was the Salvadoran television feed or the Salvadoran government feed.
That's right. It was on while ours was not. Right. And so they caught him saying, you're going to need to build 5 more prisons because we're going to send our homegrown.
Yeah. I said, homegrown's the next. The homegrown's built. You got to build about 5 more places.
Yeah, that's fair.
It was like our homegrown ones there.
Yeah, homegrown criminals.
Homegrown criminals. Right. Okay. So what's crazy
like
about
us.
Yeah, like us. It was like this judge was responding to the things Trump said in that meeting directly. For example, he says, the executive possesses enormous powers to prosecute and to deport, but with powers comes restraints. If today the executive claims the right to deport without due process and in disregard of court orders, what assurance will there be tomorrow that it will not deport American citizens and then disclaim responsibility to bring them home? And what assurances shall there be that the executive will not train its broad discretionary powers upon its political enemies?
Well, look, I mean, that we didn't need to hear that conversation between Trump and Bukele that didn't make it to the U.S. feed. We didn't need to know that that's what it sustained.
Yeah.
We didn't – they don't need to know – that the liberty of anybody, the due process rights of anybody, any person in the United States under the Fifth Amendment, if any person, regardless of whether they're aliens, regardless of whether they have a green card or they're here illegally, they're all entitled to due process, as are we. And if somebody is denied due process, then they can deny anybody due process. If you can put somebody in shackles and send them to a gulag in El Salvador without due process, and due process doesn't apply to somebody the Constitution clearly provides that due process applies to, what's the difference?
You know, actually, this is a—
Other than the color of people's skin,
No, but this is a really important distinction.
And then, of course, to go back to the other point is like, we know what he thinks of his political enemies. We know what he's trying to do with the political— He promised this during the campaign.
Right.
And basically, so much of what he's doing is about punishing political enemies. And that's a whole nother podcast. That'll be next week.
But here's the thing. It is one thing to say Abrego Garcia is here illegally and should be deported, right? He didn't just get deported, though. He got sent mistakenly to prison.
Correct.
Where there is now no recourse. He has no ability. And I don't think we
have— Where the Salvadoran authorities say nobody ever gets out of there alive.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of folks in the right-wing media are trying to act as though we are saying this is a great guy. And I don't know. There's weird stuff coming out. It looks like he has some domestic abuse charges, whatever. That is immaterial. This is what I love about this thing is like, this isn't about him. It's about us.
Correct.
It's about our system and how we do things. And so you saying that 5 years ago he did domestic assault or he was caught with MS-13s, like maybe he's a really bad guy. That is immaterial to whether or not we have due process for sending somebody to prison for the rest of their lives in a different country without any ability to have recourse.
And Judge Wilkinson makes the point early on in this opinion, basically says, if you got the evidence that he's a bad guy and that he should go somewhere,
cool,
you should be able to present that, no problem. What's the problem? Why don't you do that? And we haven't even heard— You would think that if this evidence existed that he was an MS-13 gang member, that it would have been on Fox News.
Well, it is on Fox News. Now here's the thing.
There's bullshit evidence that people are questioning, there may be more, but it doesn't matter.
So like he was caught at some point, caught up, and there was like the other guys were MS-13 members, but then there's like the cop that said
the cop
that,
the that basically.
But here's the thing: they talk like he is 100% convicted of being an MS-13 member, and that's not true.
Right? Their own immigration judge didn't buy it.
And so the judge here is basically saying maybe so, maybe not. That's not the point.
No, he exactly used those words. Maybe so, maybe not.
Yeah, right. That's right.
We don't know. I mean, but that's the whole point: is the way you find these things out is not by some asshole government appointee going on Fox News and just declaring the conclusion. You put on evidence for court.
Yeah. You don't get to just – like they're trying to –
This is our system. This is America.
They want to try this like as a PR thing. They want to be like, but he's a bad guy. Right. And I'm okay.
Okay, show us. It's fine.
And they're like, you guys are just saying he's a Maryland father. Like he's a wonderful person. Look,
he probably is, but it's like we can't – we have to presume that he's not the criminal that they're saying he is until they show us some evidence and persuade a court – meet the requisite burden of proof in that court. And, you know, it's funny. It's like, you know, you do say, I mean, obviously the conservative media ecosystem is buying some of this crap from the administration, but not everyone. I mean, even Rich Lowry, he used to be sensible.
I saw that today.
He used to be sensible in the old days, basically said, well, he is MS-13 or he probably is a bad guy, but we have to give him due process. Even Rich Lowry, who has been basically polluted beyond anything I could have imagined 25 years ago, is saying that. And I responded on Twitter with a tweet saying, could it be? Are we finally standing athwart history yelling stop?
Ah, that's good. You know, there's only a few people who are going to get that, though. That's a Buckley reference.
You're about as old as, you know. Not too many people. You're younger.
I also came up as like a Buckley conservative.
Buckley conservative, yes.
Well, okay, so I also
we
I
are
also,
the ones standing athwart history it. Saying stop, by the way.
Yeah, and also right? so is the Supreme Court.
Yes.
Like this is part of it, is this 9-0 decision, then this other judge affirms it and says, like, you got to do it. And this is one of the – there's another line in here that I want to highlight because basically you got the Supreme Court. Then you've got this saying it. Then you've got this other judge saying, all right, let's get a move on. Them saying, no, 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 stop. And this judge being like, no, this judge is right. You guys go. But they're, one of the things that the Trump team was doing is they were trying to get into some semantic debate over the word facilitate. Right? Because the Supreme Court didn't say – go send a plane and get him. They said facilitate his return.
Right. Which basically means take whatever steps you can to do this.
Well, this is my favorite line in this whole thing. I have all the poetry and prose that I've read you is the best. But this one line is facilitate is an active verb. Like it requires steps to be taken, as the Supreme Court has made perfectly clear.
Right.
Like This is where
they're playing games
they
with
are
the
trying
English
to throw
language.
Up all the smoke, and they're trying to make it a PR battle. Everything. This is actually quite simple. As this is why, to your point about how this came out an hour before it needed to, and they didn't need to hear Abrego Garcia's. They didn't need any of that. They're like, no, I'm going to write you 6 pages about why this is the clearest it could possibly be,
yeah.
and like get him back here.
And he says that
process.
Early on. Wilkinson, everybody should read this. We've got to post it again. I think when we post the, we should put it some in the, I don't know. But he basically says, lots of cases are hard. This one is not. He says that right up front. We often struggle with these things.
It is difficult in some cases to get to the very heart of the matter. But in this case, it is not hard at all.
Ding, ding, ding.
That's right. I know. I like it better when you sing than cry. It feels more like exalting.
Well, we're marching on. The truth is marching on here.
This is good. So let me. I'm going to read you one last passage, and then we'll put this to rest. But one other thing.
I want to do the dramatic reading.
Here, he said the basic differences between the branches mandate a serious effort at mutual respect. So he's saying like. Hey guys, there are co-equal branches of government. The respect the courts must accord the executive must be reciprocated by the executive's respect for the courts. Too often today, this has not been the case, as calls for impeachment of judges for decisions the executive disfavors and exhortations to disregard court orders sadly illustrate.
It's stirring language. And it's stirring because we never hear it. And the reason why we never hear it is because we never have to hear it. But the problem now is, and this is right, this is just morally right, factually right, constitutionally right, legally right, what Judge Wilkinson is saying. But the problem is I don't really associate the words mutual respect with Donald J. Trump.
Yeah. It is true that – but Donald Trump – I mean this is only 6 pages and the language is pretty clear that even a layperson like me can get through it. Donald Trump probably won't and can't read through this. But his lawyers can.
It doesn't have his name on it.
This isn't – yeah. This is, but don't you think this is like for the legal – people in his world now, the lawyers, you don't think – because in that Oval Office meeting, they tried to act like the Supreme Court's decision was different than it actually was. They won.
We won
in the Supreme Court.
Well, that was Miller. The associate, he's a associate.
He's out of his mind.
Absolutely out of his mind. And he was basically saying, that was a 9-0 victory. It's like, dude, that was not a 9-0 victory for you. And this ain't a victory either.
I don't think there's a way that anybody with halfway decent reading comprehension skills could get this one right.
Well, they're just going to say that Wilkinson has been, I don't know, he's anti-Trump and, woke or something like that. But one of the things I thought was interesting is that there are some limits to what Pam Bondi is willing to say and do. She said on Fox News on one of the evening shows that, well, we can't do this to American citizens, which I thought was interesting. At least she's setting a boundary. It's a bridge too far already because it doesn't really answer this case.
Right.
But, this guy is going to push everything to the limit,
yeah.
Trump. And so it's going to be interesting to go, to follow up on your point to see how far they're willing to go with him. And I think at the end of the day, he'll take them there bit by bit by bit because these people have shown no spine so far. They are completely, we have a president who is morally depraved. He is the height of moral depravity. And what's enabled him is moral apathy in the public, moral cowardice among Republicans, and moral corruption of people who want to work for him and want to keep their jobs and their status in this authoritarian regime. So I think that, yeah, the lawyers must be reading this and saying, but at the end of the day, a lot of these people are just going to keep going because they've marched this far already with the guy. I mean, we are way, I mean, it's like the frog boiling in the pot thing, right? This is already so far beyond the pale. It's unbelievable. If you just described this 5 years ago, I mean, we don't have to get to the point where they're taking Americans off the street because they subscribe to the Borg.
Yeah.
We don't have to get that far. It's already really, really bad. But this guy, there is no bottom with him. That's the thing. There is no bottom.
But that's what authoritarians do, right? Correct. They try to push the limits as far as they can to see what they can get away with, which is why, you know, there's Democrats have been kind of having this weird internal debate, like, why are we focused on this case versus, you know, the economy, Trump's doing the economy. And I'm like, this is one of those things where, and look, I'm a messaging person and I think people often need to focus on, things that help diminish the other side or like look for their
mortgage rates. Absolutely.
But you know what? This is one of those things that cuts right to the heart of who we are.
Of who we are. And we need to re-educate Americans about that. Because if they don't understand this, we're never going to get back to normality.
Yeah, right. And I understand why it's hard for an American to be like, okay, but this guy's like an MS-13 person. He's like, okay, deport him. But if you don't – like if you don't help people understand that, like if they can do this – just – disappear people without any due process. If we just say that's okay, it has fundamentally changed what America is, and it's changed it for you too.
Yeah, well, and that just reminds me of the clip that went viral, I think yesterday, where Grassley was confronted by his constituents, and somebody basically made the point: wait, if I get fined $1,200 and I don't pay that, and I ignore the court's order, I mean, what happens to me? Why does the Trump administration essentially get to do that? Very good. That guy, hire him. He's a that guy's a messaging genius, right? I mean, that's the intuitive part. It's like, wait a minute. I have to obey the rules. So has the government has to too. In fact, it's more important for the government to obey the rules because the government.
What's up, fools? Main Event Jey Uso here from the WWE. When it's just me between matches, it's day one-ish. And that means it's Chumba time. With hundreds of casino-style games and new titles arriving weekly, there's always something fresh to try at Chumba Casino. The daily boosts make it even more fun. And have me about to get them all during my downtime. Ready for a fun way to chill out and enjoy a few minutes for yourself? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Bye.
Okay. So let's get to more deportations, although this time we're talking about Venezuelans. So this is the other case
case. This is the case with all the people they put on the plane and was shackled and heads down marched.
So this is the removal of the Venezuelan nationals to a prison in El Salvador under the Alien Enemies Act. We got a strong 46-page opinion, so I'm not going to read that one, from Judge Boasberg this week, finding probable cause to hold the Trump administration in criminal contempt. But now you have to explain that. What does
all
that
right
mean?
Okay, look, I mean, there are I think it's important to sort of take a step back and to go through something that even a lot of lawyers don't fully understand, which is the difference between civil and criminal contempt. And yes, he was focused to some extent on criminal contempt, but there's a couple of paragraphs in there where he may have also been focusing on civil contempt. There's a little ambiguity there. So I'm going to go through it all. Basically, there are two types of contempt, civil contempt and criminal contempt. And what the difference is, it's got nothing necessarily to do with the type of case it's involved in, like a civil case or a criminal case. The difference between civil and criminal contempt is the purpose of the sanction. Let's say you get a grand jury subpoena.
Okay.
And you're being asked to testify before the grand jury about your conversations with JVL about his hair.
Yeah.
Okay. And you say, no fucking way, I'm not doing that. But you know, the government can go in, the U.S. attorney, the nut job, interim U.S. attorney Ed Martin can
go.
Eagle Ed Martin can move to enforce that subpoena against you or compel you to testify to the grand jury. And if you disobey that order, then the court can hold you in civil contempt. And why civil? Even though it might be a criminal investigation with a grand jury. Because the purpose of civil contempt is to coerce compliance with an order that can still be complied with. It's to basically say, look, you have the keys to your own jail. I'm going to put you in jail, Judge Conway says, until you appear before the grand jury. We'll let you out of jail to appear before the grand jury, and you can purge your contempt and set yourself free by testifying and obeying the subpoena. And until you do, you're going to sit in the tank. And that's what happened, you know, that's what happens occasionally when like media types, right, when they claim that the subpoenas violate the First Amendment, or there was this famous case, oh, that's so old, Susan McDougal in the Whitewater investigation like 25, 30 years ago.
This was like Judith Miller too.
You could sit in jail for a very long time if you refuse to testify, refuse to follow a court order. So that's the point. Civil contempt means coercive. Criminal contempt is a criminal sanction. Criminal contempt means you're seeking to punish. Okay? So that's when somebody violates an order and it's done. There's nothing else to compel. You can't fix it anymore. The folks are in El Salvador or they're, you know, whatever happens to them. They can't come back. Let's suppose they can't come back. That's criminal. And there are two types of criminal contempt. One is there's summary criminal contempt, but that's a very narrow circumstance. That's when something happens inside the courtroom that the judge actually personally witnesses. Like somebody throws paint at the jury.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The judge can say, you're going to jail. I sentence you to 2 weeks in jail and fine you $1,000. Marshals, take him away. That's it. That's all the process the person's due. And even though it's criminal,
right?
Basically the only recourse is then to go up to the Court of Appeals and say, well, that was a little excessive.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Court of Appeals. So that's summary. But for all other criminal contempts that are indirect criminal contempts don't happen in the courtroom, such as what Boasberg is talking about, I think, deporting these people, continuing to send the planes, turning these prisoners over to the Salvadorans in El Salvador, that's a fait accompli. It didn't happen in front of the court. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, it's a real criminal case. There has to be an indictment, and there has to be a jury if you're going to sentence them beyond 6 months. And the case has to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt, as opposed to civil, which is clear and convincing. So that's what he's contemplating here. By saying probable cause, he's saying there's probable cause for the appointment of a prosecutor. And the normal procedure under Rule 42, I think it is, of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure, is that the court can request the Justice Department to appoint a prosecutor. Okay? And if the rule says that if the Justice Department declines prosecution, okay, it like, for example, in the Biden administration, we saw this with both Peter Navarro and Steve Bannon. The Justice Department, the Biden Justice Department, did prosecute those two individuals. Didn't prosecute. There was some other person they didn't prosecute. But, you know, Bannon had to spend 6 months in the pokey, mm-hmm, because he was found guilty in his conviction. You know, they didn't get a stay of sentence on appeal. That's criminal contempt. It requires a prosecution, requires a jury trial, requires proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, here's the problem. There are a couple of problems here. One problem with criminal contempt is if the Justice Department refuses, then the court, according to the rule, has to appoint its own prosecutor. And the Supreme Court did say in a case called Louis Vuitton back in 1987, did say, yeah, we agree. I mean, that's something that courts can do. The problem is that may not be true. The Supreme Court's jurisprudence is actually overall inconsistent with that, particularly as it's developed since 1987. And the problem is, and we've talked about the appointments clause before, is the appointments clause. The appointments clause says that a superior, non-inferior officer, superior officer has to be appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate of the United States. And under the Supreme Court's jurisprudence of what is an officer who is not an inferior officer, what do they call it? Basically a superior officer, somebody who is not responsible to anybody at all is not an inferior officer. They're basically the big actor, and like Elon is. Mm-hmm. They're exercising executive power. So they are an executive officer. They're not inferior. They've got to be appointed by the president. And there's a very substantial argument, and there was a case involving a very bad lawyer named – bad meaning not a good person lawyer – Steve Donziger, who was held in criminal contempt in the Southern District of New York after the court there appointed a special prosecutor. And he petitioned for a writ of certiorari, and two justices, Justices Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, dissented from the denial of certiorari. There were a bunch of screwy aspects in the case, which are probably why the case got denied. And they said, our cases don't allow this. And it's not, you know, these right-wingers being right-wing. They're actually probably – I mean, I know at least two liberal law professors I was discussing with it online today, or they were discussing it, but I was like silent listening. They agree. It's not consistent with – so there's a serious question as to whether or not if the Justice Department refuses to prosecute what Boasberg views as a contempt or probable cause for contempt, whether he can appoint a prosecutor, which means it wouldn't be able to do it. But there's a more fundamental problem with all these contempts, forms of contempt, which we've talked about before, which is no matter which kind of contempt you go for, it requires in some fashion the involvement and cooperation of the United States Department of Justice. Civil contempt. Who enforces the civil contempt order? The United States Marshal Service. And who do they work for? Pam Bondi and Donald Trump. If you have even a summary criminal contempt, it doesn't require a prosecutor, doesn't require due process, doesn't require a trial, doesn't require proof beyond a reasonable doubt. It's just somebody throws paint at the jury. And suppose that person is a friend of Donald Trump's. Okay? The marshals might be ordered not to take him away. And the marshals don't work for the judge. They work for Donald Trump. And even if they do take him away, where are you going to put him? Federal Bureau of Prisons? Well, guess who they work for? Mm. The Department of Justice, Donald J. Trump. So they just say, we're not taking this guy. So that's the one. And then criminal contempt, full-blown indirect criminal contempt that requires a prosecutor? Well, you're done. If it turns out, which I think is true, that courts can't appoint prosecutors, but even if that's wrong, even if Louis Vuitton case in 1987 is still good law, all right, let's have Barry appoint him the prosecutor.
Barry's our producer.
He's sitting in a room grinning. He's not a lawyer, which makes him pretty much qualified to work in the Trump administration Justice Department. And so, let's say Barry gets a conviction.
Yeah, I'd convict.
Okay. And we appoint him. And what happens then? Well, sorry, he sent him off to the Bureau of Prisons. They're going to say, no, we're not putting him away. And Donald Trump could pardon the guy.
Well, and we know that he would.
He would pardon his guys, right? True. He basically – so basically it's all great.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus terms and conditions apply.
You know, these two
but
opinions.
Can you just say, well, let me, hold on. I want to read one thing that Boasberg wrote. He said, the Constitution does not tolerate willful disobedience of judicial orders, especially by officials of a coordinate branch who have sworn an oath to uphold it. To permit such officials to freely annul the judgment of the courts of the United States would not just destroy the rights acquired under those judgments. It would make a solemn mockery of the Constitution itself. But it does get to then the point of like it can make a mockery of the Constitution, but if there's nobody to enforce it.
Right. And that's the – again, that's – you know, I was going to go back to Judge Wilkinson's opinion where he's talking about the branches colliding.
Yeah.
Grinding. This is – you know, this is why people have to obey court orders, why the executive has to obey court orders. But if they don't, the courts really can't – ultimately, if the executive is intransigent and really decides that, well, we're not going to cooperate – anyway, with the enforcement of this court order, we're not just going to disobey it. We're not going to comply or cooperate with any effort by the court to enforce its order. The courts are stuck.
Well, actually, that brings me to this question. So now that you've got this Wilkinson thing, I'm sorry, I'm going back to the Abrego mm-hmm. case.
No.
And he says facilitate.
They're both very closely related.
Now we're still at this place of they got to now go get him back,
right?
Or not?
And then not only that. Even if you had a situation where ultimately Trump complied and the administration complied, they're not going to comply in the next case. You're going to have to go through this whole same process all over again. And what you could have as a practical matter is like everything has to be litigated. That's kind of where we are now. Every prisoner has to be litigated. Every illegal act has to be litigated because they're going to take the position that until there's that court order – until we're about to be held in contempt or when we are held in contempt, that's when we will obey. You know, it's just no way to – you can't run the government that way. You could have all 600 or 700 federal judges – I forget how many they are – issuing orders every day. But it's not practical. It is not practical. The government can't run that way. That's why we have a president, an executive who is charged – with faithfully executing the constitutional laws of the United States. And so what we have is, and this is the ultimate problem, which I think we've talked about this before, and it's, I think, the right way to end because we're at the same point. We get to the same point every single time, is that what do you do when you have a president who not only refuses to comply with his sworn obligation, constitutional obligation to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution and to faithfully execute the constitutional laws of the United States. And he just not only refuses to, he does the exact opposite.
Speaking of contempt.
Right. He has utter contempt for the documents, the laws, and the constitutional provisions he is sworn to enforce. He violates them intentionally. What do you do with that? Well, the solution isn't the courts. The correct solution the framers would have told you is, well, that's what impeachment and removal is for. But then you have the problem that there are more than half of the members of the United States Congress who refuse to do their duties. And that is why we are at this grave moment in American constitutional history.
Okay, I'm not going to let you end just on that because I do too many podcasts with you and JVL and it's really bumming me out. Right. Here, let me just give you
– the funeral dirge music instead of the
– Let me throw one last thing at you. Harvard?
Oh, fight fiercely, Harvard. Harvard 1984. I'm so proud of Harvard.
You feel good?
I feel great. Fight fiercely, Harvard. This is better than beating Yale.
Okay. I cannot get these internecine Ivy League battles mean nothing to me. I went to Kenyon. I went to Kenyon for people who, like small liberal arts schools. Can you just say Harvard's lawyers wrote the university will not surrender its independence or relinquish its constitutional rights. Neither Harvard nor any other private university can allow itself to be taken over by the federal government.
If only Paul Weiss had that kind, those kinds of cojones.
Do you think it's a turning point at all? Like, do you think they're going to show people like you can stand up and really fight?
I hope so. And I, you know, look, I mean, if Harvard had capitulated, I think we would have seen the same dynamic that we saw with the law firms. I mean, Paul Weiss was, you know, it was a firm you would have thought would have fought. It has the resources, it has the pedigree, it's got this glorious history of doing the right thing. You would have thought they would fight. And when they didn't, that sent the worst conceivable message to other members of the bar.
Right.
If Harvard, the most prestigious university in the United States, if not on the planet, and the most well-financed university on the planet, had capitulated, why would anybody else want to fight? Even Columbia now, which had capitulated, is sort of making noises about uncapitulating a little.
Yeah, they should uncapitulate. Hey, let me ask you this, though.
Yes, ma'am.
You know, Barry went and found – speaking – I don't know why he's getting so much play this this – but he went and found all of these clips from back in 2014 when, you know, Republicans were accusing the Obama IRS of unfairly targeting Tea Party groups.
Yeah.
If the IRS can go after you because of what you think or what you believe or what you do, we'd no longer live in a free country. That's what this is all about. And if you think they're not going to eventually use it against your politics, whatever they might be, it's ridiculous. They certainly will.
I can also assure you that were this a Republican president, a Republican attorney general, and a Republican IRS that were targeting Democrats, I at least would speak out just as vigorously against it. Because if we are going to respect rule of law, the apparatus of the federal government cannot and should not be used as a partisan tool to bludgeon your enemies.
I can tell you that what's become clearly apparent is a culture throughout the federal government, not just the IRS, but the Department of Justice, the State Department, et cetera. We've seen that now through three different incidents that basically use the government as an instrument of political activity to target your political opponents, to make life difficult for people that are saying things that you don't like, to make life difficult for whistleblowers that are saying things about the State Department that you don't like. And I believe that all that comes from the top of any organization. So I think that's where the questions are increasingly leading. And it's embarrassing for the country. These are things you typically see in the third world.
I think the conservative Tea Party groups were intentionally targeted as critics of the administration, and that people used the power the IRS gave them over these groups to silence one group and let the other group flourish, and that's bad for democracy.
They systematically and for a sustained period of time targeted people for exercising their most fundamental right, their right to speak in a political fashion, their free speech rights under the First Amendment, and they went after conservative groups. They were put on a list, they were denied their tax-exempt status, so of course there was targeting.
The point that he's raising with regard to how the IRS is now sort of in this role of stepping on the scales to determine what is or isn't political speech, to me, seems to be completely outside the realm of what the IRS ought to be about.
And so we've got all these clips. You went and found all these clips of it's J.D. Vance, it's Marco Rubio, it's Ted Cruz all saying.
And they had a legit beef. There was some weird stuff that went on in the Obama Justice Department. I know a guy who was trying to get approval for a 501c3 that was very, very pro-Zionistic. And he couldn't get it. And he ultimately litigated about it. Yeah, there was, you know, and that's – you can't do that. And now they're basically making noises, this administration, about pulling
their C3 status.
C3 status, which would basically cost them hundreds of billions of dollars. I mean, it would be insane. And it would basically
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Could basically shut down lots of universities by doing that.
Yeah, but you know, here's the thing. And I think that Republicans who think like, Harvard, they're getting what they deserved. And, you know, the right has been on sort of a tear about universities for, I think, a lot of – some reasons good, some reasons bad.
No, basically the right has become totally, totally lawless in the sense that they want – laws to apply one way to the people they like and not to apply at all to the people they don't like.
Yeah, and they way they talked about this in 2014 was like, this is the end of our country if you're allowed to do this. If you're allowed to, on ideological grounds, take away someone's tax status or use the IRS to target them or the power of the federal government, that is lawless. It is illegal. It is immoral. Yeah, they were right.
They were right.
They were right. But now they're doing it
right.
to
but,
people.
And that's the thing about it. That's what the rule of law is about. The rule of law is what applies to one side applies to the other. And we used to understand that better. Sure, there's like political bullshit on the margins where you kind of give your side a little bit of benefit of the doubt. But now we've got to the point where they're just absolutely just lying.
They will be sorry when they don't have it.
Oh, absolutely right.
Down
and,
the road.
And there was, I mean, we don't have time for it, but there, you know, the, one of the law firms that most recently decided to fight, Sussman Godfrey, and thank God they do. I mean, I knew Steve Sussman, a wonderful man, a great lawyer and ballsy. And, you know, the DNA of that firm was to fight all along. He was represented by this great firm, Munger, Tolles & Olson, and in particular, the former Solicitor General under the Obama administration, Don Verrilli, who's just a wonderful man. And they wrote this absolutely stirring complaint, which also the first several pages everyone should read. And they made exactly this point. Don Verrilli and his team did. Like, you may like this now, but next time this means people you like may get it.
Yeah.
And that's what the rule of law is about.
And thus ends this episode of George Conway Explains It All to Sarah and all of you. Guys, thanks for joining us for this episode. Don't forget to rate and subscribe and do all the things. Find us on your podcast. Watch us on YouTube. Tell your friends about us. You know, get your one skin. We'll see you next week.
Well, George Conway, he's a man with a plan. Got to sit down with Sarah Longwell, take a stand. Explain all the legal problems they're piling high. With Donald Trump, oh my, oh my, oh my. He said, Sarah, let me break it down for you. There's obstruction of justice, corruption too. The legal tangles and troubles, they're growing fast. It's a storm that's gonna last and last. Oh, Conway, tell them well about it. Those legal problems can't live without it. From the emoluments to the Russian ties. Listen close.
Yo, it's Jay Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.